නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Good morning everyone. Today we'll be moving into a new topic. I think I was able to send the handout yesterday night. And because last time we finished the discussion about the conditioned realities, the sankata paramattas. So what we have now is to discuss about the unconditioned realities, which are fivefold according to the Theravada tradition. Actually, this some teachers may not agree with this sometimes, but we'll discuss on this matter. So normally we say that the unconditioned reality is fivefold, and we normally know about the nirvana that we aspire to attain. In addition to this nirvana, we find a few other unconditioned states according to this lesson. So if I summarize what we have discussed so far, we first introduce what are the ultimate natures, paramattas. Then they were called paramattas as they have the we call as they have the intrinsic nature of themselves. Then out of them, some depend on other realities to their existence, for their existence, and then some do not. So the realities that need the support of other realities for their existence or the sustaining or to remain, I would call to exist, are called conditioned realities. And the realities that do not need such a support, such an assistance, were called unconditioned realities. So in Pali term, we use the conditioned is sankata. Sankata, it's very useful to know these Pali terms. Then the unconditioned is called asankata. A comes for the negative aspect. Sankata is conditioned, asankata is unconditioned. Then we categorize the conditioned realities into four groups: the paramatta dhammas, natures. When we discuss about the conditioned realities in terms of arising, we call them the paramatta dhammas. Then we discuss about another three stages of these conditioned realities, which were named as uppadino dhamma, the resultant realities that are supposed to happen as their karma has gained the opportunity. Then paramatta jatikas, like sort of like potencies that are following our mind stream. Then the anuppanna dhamma, the non-arisen realities. So these were the topics that we discussed. Non-arisen dhammas means anuppanna dhammas means the realities that are supposed to happen with which we are bound, because the conditions are still prevailing. And then in last two weeks we discussed about an analysis about these all four conditioned realities, and we came up with the terms like the sankata jatika and tekalika jatika, if you remember the last week's lecture. So now we move into a completely a different realm of the realities, which are the unconditioned states. Unconditioned. These realities are not conditioned or not supported by other realities for their existence. When we use the word term sankata in Pali, today's topic is called asankata paramatta. You remember in the chart, it was here AP asankata paramatta. This was sankata paramatta. So we discuss about all these four. Now we are focusing on these five today, right? The asankata. So when we talk about the word sankata, it's better to have a small discussion on this sankata. Sankata can be explained in two ways. One is based on the Sankata Lakkhana Sutta, which is found in Anguttara Nikaya. According to Sankata Lakkhana Sutta, any reality that has the three characteristics of conditioned realities. It means if any reality has the natures of arising, natures of decaying, nature of decaying, nature of vanishing. Uppada, jati, jara, marana. Arising, decaying and vanishing are called sankata. And at the same time, these realities which undergo these three phenomena have the three stages of existence. Uppada, arising, titti, persisting, banga, vanishing. If you remember, we discussed about six qualities that the arising, decaying and passing away. Then arising, persisting stage, it's a stage actually. Decaying and persisting are two different things, and passing away. Based on that, we classified realities into past, present and future. Yes. Sorry for the interruption.
If a reality to be called sankata, there are two ways to call something a sankata. Sankata we normally translate in English as conditioned, made out of causes, produced by causes. It means that need the support of causes. So one way of interpreting this is the realities that have the three characteristics which were called upada, titi, jati, jara, marana, arising, decaying and vanishing, and which undergo the three phases of existence, that is arising, persisting and vanishing, are called sankata, are called conditioned realities. That was the first way of interpreting. So based on these six characteristics, we would term times a reality which has arisen and passed away is past. The reality which has arisen but not vanished yet is called present, and a reality that has not arisen yet is called future. So based on these conditioned natures, we can classify realities based into time,
related to time. Then another way of defining the sankata is realities that need the support of other realities. Realities that need the support of other realities to their existence. Realities that need the support of other realities to their existence. That is another definition of sankata. So, in the same way, when we come into asankata, so if I write them, the sankata, the realities that have or possess, we can call, the three characteristics of conditioned, that is arising, decaying and vanishing. If something has these three characteristics, we can call it a sankata. Another way of defining sankata, this is based on Sankata Lakkhana Sutta. Another way of defining the word sankata is realities that require the support or assistance of other realities to their existence. This is the second way of defining. So this definition comes based on the word, we can arrive at this definition based on the word formation. Is it a new definition? No, this is fully in line with the Buddha's teachings, the sutra. We normally say this was like sang, the plus kra, the Sanskrit root krita, right? We know the re changes into a, and then because of sans, the root S and K change into KKH. And then because of three triple consonants, one K is dropped and become sankata. And this nigahita change into this, that is grammatically, we come to the word sankata. Right? So this kri, the Sanskrit word is normally in Pali we call it kar, to make, to do something. So the realities which are sang means having come together, sans, having come together. Tha indicates a past participle, a passive past participle. Something which was done, that is called katha. Something which was done. Done by whom? Done by other realities having come together. Having come together. Samagantva, having come together. The realities which were done by other realities having come together are called sankata. So that is how we make the word. So, and this, if any reality is depending on other realities, it has an arising, it has an exist, persisting, decaying, and it also vanishes one day. So therefore, we have two ways of explaining about the word sankata. So in when we talk about the Sankata Lakkhana Sukta, we focus on this aspect. And we talk about, when we talk about the necessity of causes for a reality to happen, or to some reality to exist, to sustain, then we go into the second definition. So the realities that we have so far discussed have both the characteristics. They do possess these three characteristics, and they do need the support of other realities for their existence. They were the Paramatta Dhammas, directly we call Sankata. And the remaining three, the last three, the Uppadino, Paramatta Jatika and Anuppannas, also are related to these aspects. For instance, we know, we discussed how they are related to arising and decaying and passing away, because they are the reality that would arise and pass away in future. So they were, even though they were not pure Sankatas, they are related to Sankata. We call them Sankata Jatika. Then in regard, with regard to the second aspect, we can understand the Kamma remains fertile, capable of giving a rebirth as long as avijja and tanha remain. So likewise, they also need some support of other realities. So in that sense, those natures are also can be called sankata in this regard even. So now what we are talking are asankata. Asankata means completely negative of these aspects. So asankata realities does not have the natures of arising, decaying and vanishing. And also, they do not need the support of other realities to their exist for their existence. I'll repeat what I said again. Asankata realities does not have these characteristics of arising, decaying, and vanishing. And at the same time, they do not need the support of other realities to their existence. So that's why they are called asankata, completely opposite, completely different from conditioned reality. So we call them the unconditioned realities. The unconditioned realities. So now we are going to discuss about how do we understand this unconditioned nature. So we normally say, if this unconditioned reality doesn't have arising, doesn't have decaying, and doesn't have the vanishing, if it doesn't undergo the three stages of arising, persisting and passing away, it cannot be distinguished, it cannot be classified either as past, present or future. Because something which has arisen and passed away is called past. Something which has arisen but not vanished yet is called present. Something which has not arisen yet is called future. So if some reality doesn't have these characteristics of arising, especially the arising characteristic, we cannot classify it into the time, within the time frame. So we call their kalamuttaka, freed from time. Unconditioned states should not be distinguished as past, present or future. But do they exist? Yes, they do exist. They do not undergo the phases of arising, persisting and passing away. Uppada, titi, banga. They do not go under these three phases. But do they arise? Do they exist? Yes, they exist. So now the contradiction may occur in someone's mind. What about this titi phase? Titi is persisting. Right? So when we say unconditioned reality doesn't have an exist arising, doesn't have an passing away, doesn't it exist? Does it exist? Yes, it does exist. So can't we call that it is persisting according to that? No. The reason is, according to the Theravadins, the phrase or the term persisting has a specific unique meaning. Persisting means, titi means, the existence between, the phase of existence between arising and vanishing. The titi or the persisting means the phase between arising and vanishing. So that is the explanation of titi. Explanation of titi. Another way is, after it has arisen, till passing away, the decaying, the stage in which the decay was seen. Whatever way we may use. But persisting always refers to a stage between arising and vanishing. So if a reality doesn't have an arising, doesn't have a passing away, though it exists, even though it exists, it should not be designated or coined as this titi, as a titi. So therefore, the unconditioned realities, even though they do not have a face of titi, why don't we call it a titi? They are existence because they don't have arising and passing away. It's just a matter of terming them, matter of naming them. So unconditioned realities do exist. Because during the phase of titi, according to the Buddha's teachings, during the phase of titi, alternation is seen, the decaying is seen. So another characteristic of titi is, during that phase of persisting, the reality decays. So now these unconditioned states, if they didn't have an arising, doesn't have an vanishing, what does it imply? It means they have been existing forever. They have been existing forever, and they will exist forever. They have been existing forever, and they will exist forever. Seems very odd when we look into this with an ordinary mind, with normal mindset. Ordinary means like when we think about it, can something exist forever? Because even that was the argument of Thomas Aquinas when he was going to advocate the existence of God. But it is improbable or impossible. And it's not logical that something have an existence forever, which had been existing forever. Same thing applies to samsara when we come into Buddhism. So, but according to Theravada teachings, the samsara doesn't have a beginning. And because if it has a beginning, we come into the Buddhism. Actually, the entire teachings of the Buddhism collapse if it has a beginning. Because if you have a beginning, we come into huge contradictions what the Buddha has taught. So based on Theravada aspect, Buddhism exists, the beginning of the samsara cannot happen. If you look into the matter in terms of the Theravada perspective, I'm not saying that what the other arguments made by others are invalid. When we look into the matter in terms of Theravada Buddhism, the beginning has cannot happen. So we'll come into that discussion in another lecture. So how it is related to our meditation and how it is related to the understanding of Buddhism. So according to this explanation, the unconditioned states had never had a beginning. So it means they have been existing forever, and they will never have a vanishing. They will never experience the vanishing. So it means they will exist forever. So this ever, idea of ever, is something very, very strange. And another infinite idea within the Theravadins is the limitation of the space. According to the Theravadins, the space doesn't have a limit. How much you travel in this universe, you'll still have some part, still have more to travel. And that's the number of the beings within the universe. These are things that the Theravadins put into like we are unable to explain it logically or explain give a explanation that fits to the ordinary mind. But when you come into the stage of kankha vitarani, the getting out of the doubt, getting rid of the doubt, we normally get rid of the doubt about a beginning, that he comes into the conclusion that it cannot has a beginning. And that is the main thing, that within the samsara it cannot have a beginning when someone comes into the stage of kankha vitarani, having contemplated on the cause and effect relationship. Anyway, because if to finalize this statement, because if the samsara had a beginning, how do we explain the first nama and rupa? What were the causes for this nama and rupa? And what was the existence one was born into? Is the first life is a human life, or first life is a divine life, or a peta life, or a animal life? Then which phenomena desired this arising? So then if the first existence could happen, without a kamma, because there was no kamma. So it means if someone was born as a human being, it shows that even without a wholesome deed, someone can be born as a human being spontaneously without any cause. If someone was born in the first life as a in the woeful realms, it shows that without akusala kammas, you can be born in the woeful realms. And that contradicts with the theory of karma. And then, the most importantly, so we know that attainment of nirvana, attainment of the full liberation or cessation happens. When we remove the causes for rebirth, we come into the full liberation. That will be the eternal peace. So if we are advocating the first arising, beginning of samsara, how the first arising, first life has happened without any causes. Because there were no causes prior to the first arising, first life. So then the first life has suddenly popped up. So it means without causes, the life can come up. So if that is the case, how do we guarantee? How do we guarantee that even though after we have eradicated all the causes and become an arahant and enter the parinirvana, how do we guarantee that there will be no, the suffering would not start again? Because in the first place, the suffering has occurred without a cause. If we advocate, if the Theravadians advocate the beginning of samsara. So that's why I said the entire Theravada Buddhism collapses if we are advocating a beginning of samsara. It's not something that is not taught. It's not something that we should not think about. It is something that is clearly advocated within the teachings, and also something that matches the teachings. So then we come into the topic, the unconditioned reality has existed forever and will exist forever. So how do we understand this nature? How do we understand that existing or the nature of this unconditioned state? I would use the word states, the plural I have used in the handout, because we are going to explain about 5 unconditioned states. In the end, I will reduce them into 4 actually. So I will start from the last one, the nirvana, nissarana nirvana. That is the nirvana that we aspire, we wish to attain. We can call it the maha nirvana, the great nibbana, the great nibbana. So how do we understand this? And there are 2 ways that we have to understand, we have to look into this unconditioned state. There are 2 ways. One way is explaining it as a reality that do exist. The other way is the cessation or the liberation from the suffering that is going to happen. So these are the 2 approaches. One is that it should be explained as a completely a different state from that is of the suffering. If my memory was correct, in the Alagadupama Sutta, Buddha mentioned there are 2 stages, 2 states. The suffering and the non-existence of the suffering. Dukkancha, dukkha nirodhancha, he advocate 2 states only. But it includes all the 4, because in the suffering part, we can have the cause of suffering and also the path to get rid of the suffering. So mainly we have the conditioned side and the unconditioned side. So they are completely 2 different states, or 2 different existences. That is the first way of explaining. But if we take this approach, the nirvana or the unconditioned state does not have much benefit of it. It means it will not be a greater bliss as the Buddha has advocated. So therefore, the nirvana should be explained with another approach, that is the non-arising or the cessation of the suffering. A cessation of the suffering that was going to happen had the causes prevailed. So we'll come into that matter now. So we'll we'll think about the first approach. According to this, there are 2 stages. For instance, if you take this board as the unconditioned state, for an analogy or simile, the board as the unconditioned state, it exists regardless of the suffering. How does it exist? What is the logic behind it? We cannot explain it, why such a state exists. We cannot explain that logically. So then how do we believe on it? Because based on the faith of what the Buddha and his disciples have said, so such a state exists. So can't it logically be assumed? Yes, it could be, it can be. That is what the Sumedha, the Bodhisattva, before his first prophecy, thought or assumed that there should be such a state opposite to the suffering, like the light against the darkness, or the healthiness against the sickness. So it can be assumed by some special beings if you think wisely. And also these all, the validity of this unconditioned state remains that on the fact that there is a rebirth, there is a suffering which is going to continue. If you think about end of a suffering at the end of the death, these kind of teachings are not necessary, because Buddhism depends on the rebirth. If there is no rebirth, there is no use of such a teaching, because the suffering is going to end at our death. Right? So therefore, now if we take this as the unconditioned state, this is the unconditioned state. The suffering we experience is the nama and rupa. So we'll go to our famous diagram. So this is the birth, and this is the death. This is the future, this is the past, and this is the present life. Then someone was born, the nama rupa exist. So now we are here, and there will be some other nama rupa which is going to happen. And it is followed by a karma. Karma is supported by avijja and tanha. Supported. So as long as the tanha is, karma is supported by these, one day it will get the opportunity. So I'll do it from here. One day it will get the opportunity. And then it will produce some results. Anupanna realities. But in last week's lecture I mentioned Anupanna reality are just potential. These are the future realities. We normally say these are the future realities. Anupanna realities, that the boundness, we are potency that we possess at the moment. The potency that we possess at the moment. But for the easiness of explanation, now I'll go back to the older diagram. So I will call them the Anupanna realities rather than the future realities. But if you remember in the previous lecture, I changed the diagram and mentioned Anupanna should be addressed, and also Upadino should be addressed from here, not from here, because this is the position of the future realities. But since it is very difficult to convey the idea of this Anupanna realities at this point, so I'll again come into the older diagram and say that these are the Anupanna realities, the suffering that is going to, the suffering we are bound with, right? So now I'll just change this a bit. I'll make it, this is the present one. So we can mention the karma is following us, and from future it will get the opportunity. Now this is the future aspect. In the past we have lived and died, and the past life karma was supported by avijja and tanha in the previous life. So it got the opportunity and it gave a rebirth, gained the opportunity one day. Right? So this is the normal diagram we drew. So now if you go into the Anupanna, now the aspects, like these are the paramatta dhammas, realities that arise and pass away. These are the latent forces, the paramatta jatikas. Just we leave apart the upadino dhammas. Upadino dhammas we always discuss after the karma has gained the opportunity, the resultants that are going to happen. So we'll just leave it apart. So these are the paramatta jatikas, and these are the anupanna dhammas that are going to happen as long as the conditions prevail. Conditions prevail. As long as the conditions prevail. So now this, there was the unconditioned state. There was the unconditioned state. And there is this conditioned existence. Conditioned existence. So in the first approach I mentioned the nirvana or the unconditioned. I'm talking about the great nirvana here today. Great nirvana. So it does, we'll move into the other types of nirvanas next week. The great nirvana do exist regardless of the existence of these states. It do exist. So how do we prove this within the tradition, because the Buddha has mentioned such a state does exist. Such a state does exist. If such a state is not existing, it is impossible to have a liberation from this suffering. So that was his utterance. That was his one of his lion's roars, that he's mentioning that there is such a state which is unconditioned, which is unmade, which is unconstructed, which doesn't have a decay, in which there is no birth, no death, and so forth. There are such number of few suttas Buddha has mentioned about the existence of this state, So the tradition explains, the later books explain that if someone asks a question, how could such a state exist? Because while all what we experience is conditioned reality and also the forces, how do we advocate the logic behind such an unconditioned state? How such thing happens? So it's very difficult to explain looking into these conditioned states. So that is the first way of approaching nirvana. So it's unconditioned, it's an unconditioned state. So that is the first approach. It exists. The second approach is, I'll later at the end of the lecture, I'll combine these two approaches and try to understand this existence of this unconditioned state based on the Buddha's teachings. Now, according to another, second approach is the non-arising of the unarisen suffering. The non-arising or cessation of the suffering that is about to happen, that is supposed to happen, had the conditions prevail, some of the these suffering would occur. So what we are doing is we remove the conditions, so we get freed from the suffering. So if we put it in the diagram, so if the avijja and tanha are removed, kamma becomes infertile. We can call it was exhausted. So at that time, if this is the occasion where the arahanthood happens, the eradication happens, if this were the eradicating chitta by which causes were removed, then what happens? With the removal of the causes, the suffering that was supposed to happen becomes ceased before its arising. So the suffering is ceased. The suffering that was supposed to happen, see, this suffering that is supposed to happen cannot be removed. That's why Arahant has to live after his attainment. So this is the cessation of the suffering that was going to happen. I think we discussed on this matter a few times. And at the same time, it is a liberation, because you get liberated from the suffering that is going to happen. Liberation always comes from something which is about to happen, not from the something that has occurred. According to the Theravada teachings, something happens, a suffering occurs to us, it naturally passes away momentarily. Another new suffering occurs. It's a momentary existence is happening. In such a momentary doctrine, a doctrine which advocates about the momentariness, if something has occurred, it will naturally vanish. There is no need of escape, no need of a liberation, because naturally that suffering will cease. So liberation is always related to the escape from something which has not come yet. A suffering that we haven't confronted yet, from that we are advocating a liberation. So therefore, this can be called as a liberation, because we got liberated at this moment. We get liberated. What the moment we attain arahanthood, we get liberated from suffering. The moment we get the arahanthood, the non-arisen suffering, anuppanna dukkha, would cease. Anuppanna dukkha. Anuppanna dhammas would cease. This is paramatta jatikas, right? This is a paramatta dhamma. Right? I also mentioned, instead of say calling them future, I gave the position for the anuppanna dhammas, for the easiness of understanding. So when these paramatta jatikas were put down, this anuppanna dhamma comes into cessation. So that is called the liberation. That is called the nirvana, the cessation, because the suffering got ceased we call it Nibbana because of the cessation. We call it Nibbana, Nirvana. We got liberated, liberation. We call Vimutti. Another word, Vimutti, liberated from the suffering. Cessation of the suffering. What kind of cessation? It's not the momentary cessation. A reality, the suffering which occurred, the mind and matter, ceased naturally, passes away naturally. We are not talking about this naturally passing away. We are talking about a cessation before the arising. And that is a liberation. And then we can also call it was eradicated. In one way, or exhausted, got exhausted, eradicated, or got exhausted. So we call it pahana sometimes. What was exhausted, what was eradicated? The non-arisen suffering. And also, that was the eradication or removal, or all these cessations, eradications, liberations are from, are of. We can say are of, cessation of, eradication of, and liberation from the non-arisen suffering. Non-arisen suffering. So these three aspects, the cessation, liberation, and eradication. What was the cessation of what? Cessation of the non-arisen suffering. Liberation from what? From non-arisen suffering. Eradication or exhaustion of what? Of the non-arisen suffering. So we call it in Pali, Anuppada. Anuppada Nirodha. One word. Anuppada Nirodha. I have given in the handout these three terms. So the same Nirvana we can term as the Nirvana because it was the cessation of the suffering, ceasing of the suffering. It is the liberation from the suffering. It is the eradication or the exhaustion of suffering. And also these cessations, eradications, liberations are from the non-arisen suffering. So therefore we call that, give the terms Nirvana, Vimutti, Pahana, Anuppanna Nirodha. Or Anuppada Nirodha, whatever term we use. So these are synonyms of Nirvana. We can find these terms. Sometimes the word Pahana can have few meanings. We'll discuss them in a future lecture if we happen to continue. Pahana has few meanings. Sometimes it refers to this Nirvana state. Nissarana Pahana. We have these terms. So this is the second approach. Freedom or cessation of the non-arisen suffering. The first approach, Nirvana do exist. It has been existing. It will exist forever. It is a completely different state from the conditioned realities. Just acceptance. We have to accept that. When we are studying, accept means, when we are studying, we have to take it as a reality that exists based on the Buddha's teachings. Now, why do we need such two approaches? That is also very necessary to understand. Why do we need two approaches? Now, I'll go into the second approach. The second approach. Cessation of the non-arisen suffering. Liberation from the non-arisen suffering. Eradication of the non-arisen suffering. So, if we term Nirvana in this way, a very logical and obvious question is, does Nirvana depends on suffering? Someone can ask the question, if the suffering didn't exist, Nirvana cannot exist, because Nirvana itself is the cessation of the suffering. So cessation of the suffering depends on suffering. If there is no suffering, there cannot be a cessation. If there was no suffering, you cannot have a liberation from that suffering. If there was no suffering, there cannot be an eradication or exhaustion of suffering. So therefore, if we take only the second approach, the question we encounter is that Nirvana depends on suffering. If there is no suffering, there cannot be a Nirvana. This contradicts with the teachings. Therefore, only the second approach has few questions, unanswerable questions. Then what we think about the first approach? We talk about the first approach. Now think. This is also a one common, can be a common way of thinking about Nirvana. Nirvana exists as a separate state. Now we think in meditation. Now we'll think about a practical aspect. When we meditate, vipassana, do vipassana meditation, when the wisdom comes into a higher stage, the yoga avachara, the yogi, the meditator observes Nirvana suddenly. That is not happening spontaneously. It's happening with a gradual training. His mind has to be escalated to that level in order to observe this unconditioned blissful object. So what do we think? If this was the Magga Chitta, now assume, we'll try to think about it. If this was the Nirvana, if, right? I'm using the word if. Nirvana is a completely a different reality from conditioned realities. If it was a conditioned reality and we do observe it, when we observe the Nirvana with the Magga Chitta, with the wisdom, it eradicates the kamma and kilesa and the suffering. We know that this suffering exists. We have discussed on this matter. That's why I had to have that approach of Anuppanna to explain Nirvana. Without Anuppanna Dhamma, without Paramattha Jatika, you cannot explain Nirvana as a blissful state. We cannot explain Nirvana clearly. That's why we had to discuss about these stages in the beginning. I think now some would understand why I took such an approach. That's basically to explain the Nirvana, we need such state. And Buddha has advocated such states. Now, with the path consciousness, observing Nirvana, a separate reality, the Paramattha Jatikas are removed. We know that we get liberated from the suffering because everyone knows. So, what we are talking about now, the defects of the second approach, I think we discussed. Now, the first approach, if we make the first approach, Nirvana is if we consider Nirvana as an existing state, apart from the unconditioned states, apart from the conditioned states. So now we normally know when we meditate and we attain the Arahanthood, at that moment, the path consciousness observes Nirvana. We start to see this Nirvana when our wisdom has got developed to that particular level. With that observation, together with that observation, with the wisdom that we have developed so far, this path consciousness eradicates the causes of suffering. So when the causes are eradicated, this suffering that we are bound to experience would be ceased. We know that. That's why we normally say, why do we say that please attain the Nirvana? Why do we make efforts to attain Nirvana? Because we know this suffering is going to come countless times if we wander in the samsara. We know that to get rid of this suffering, we are trying to attain the Nirvana, to observe Nirvana or to see Nirvana. That is the normal idea of common Buddhists. Now, if we think a bit sharply or if we scrutinize this idea, what do we think? Now, this path consciousness observes Nirvana, which is a completely different state, different reality, and that eradicates the causes of suffering, and we get rid of the suffering. The suffering is no more in that sense. If we say the suffering is no more. So now what do we think? What is the real bliss? What is the greatest bliss? Is it the Nirvana or the non-existence of the suffering? What would we would aspire to? What would be the greatest bliss that we are going to experience? Or what we are going to desire? Is it the Nirvana which became the object of the path consciousness which helped to eradicate the causes, or the non-existence of the suffering itself? The obvious answer is the non-existence is the real freedom. That is the liberation. That is the cessation. That is what we want. In this case, if we take this first approach, Nirvana is just a means by which we attain the highest bliss. Nirvana cannot be the highest bliss. Highest bliss should be the absence of the suffering. Highest bliss should be the cessation of the suffering. Highest bliss should be the liberation from the suffering. But how the Buddha has mentioned there is no bliss higher than Nirvana. If this first approach was made, only the first approach was made with such an aspect, attitude, Buddha have to say Nirvana is the instrument or the cause which supports you to attain the greatest bliss, which is the liberation from the suffering that is going to happen. So therefore, with the first approach, Nirvana is not the greatest bliss. And it is not the refuge of being. The refuge, in this case, the refuge is the non-existence of the suffering. But that is not how the Buddha has mentioned. So if you want to match the explanations with the Buddha's teachings, we cannot take only the first approach. Why is that? The suffering, we were bound with the suffering, and that release from that suffering should be the greatest bliss. So how do we get rid of these two contradicting or two opposing ideas? If we take the second approach, if we only take the second approach, saying that the Nirvana is the cessation of the suffering, liberation from the suffering, eradication of the suffering which has not arisen yet, then what happens? Nirvana becomes something depending on suffering. Without suffering, there cannot be Nirvana. This also shows a huge defect in the explanation. If we take Nirvana as a completely separate reality other than this process, completely apart from reality, something like a new, something like a citta or chetasika which exists, we observe it and we get rid of the suffering, then Nirvana is not the highest bliss. So how do we get rid of this paradox? For that, we have to combine both the approaches. For the very fundamental aspect of this merging is we have to take, there are only two aspects exist. I'm talking about the animated beings, the living beings. This is not applicable to non-living things. With regard to living beings, only there are two faces, or better to not say faces, two aspects, two states. The state of the conditioned, existing of the conditioned reality, the continuation of the conditioned reality. So when we say the samsara, we have to take the past, the present, and also the future that is going to come. This is the conditioned state. Then we have an unconditioned state according to the first approach. It exists regardless of the first conditioned state. So what happened? There is no third stage. There is no third aspect. Only two exist. So that's why in the first lecture I mentioned. So we have to take it as two things. This is Nirvana and this is the conditioned state. So what happens? So if we consider up to here is the past and the present, this is going to be the future lives. So when the causes are eradicated, when the causes are eradicated, the suffering that is about to happen would cease. So what remains is the other state. That is the Nirvana. There's no third stage. If we take only the first approach, sometimes, not always, sometimes we may come into an idea about a Nirvana, the existence of the conditioned state, and the non-existence of the condition. So that the third stage is there. So what we are doing is we are abolishing that third stage and saying only two stages exist. So what happens? So the non-existence of this suffering itself is the Nirvana. Why is that? Because there is only through two stages. There is the stage of the existing conditioned realities and the unconditioned reality. So what happens when these conditioned realities come into the cessation? So what comes up is the Nirvana. Another simile. This table is covered with a cloth. When you remove the cloth, what comes up is the table. So likewise, when we want to merge, like when we want to apply the teachings based on the Buddha's explanations, so the cessation of the suffering, the liberation of suffering, eradication of suffering itself is the Nirvana, and that is the second stage. if there are only two stages, the absence of suffering, the cessation of suffering, is the nirvana itself. And it has been existing forever. Why is that? Because it's a completely different stage. It's a completely different state. It was covered to us by this conditioned state. Us means this conditioned state covers it. So when the condition, the non-arisen conditioned realities, not the arisen ones, non-arisen conditioned realities comes into cessation. Now we said the nirvana is like the board. So I'll take out this approach because it has problems. So nirvana we consider as the board. So when the causes are removed, when the non-arisen suffering is taken off, taken out, what happens? What remains is the board. That is the nirvana. And that is the real bliss. Because the non-existence of the suffering itself is nirvana. The cessation of the suffering itself is nirvana. That's it. So now finally, I'll take 5 more minutes to come into this point. Now, in terms, this is the explanation in terms of the ultimate sense. Now we come into the conventional idea. Conventionally, how do we explain nirvana? Anuppanna Dhamma, right? Conventionally, how do we explain nirvana? Right. So before that, did this state exist for? Yes, it existed. So that's why at this moment, even at this moment, we have the possibilities. If the kamma and kilesa were eradicated, this suffering would not have occurred. We would have attained nirvana. So therefore, it exists even at this moment. It's a matter of fact that we don't remove the causes and get liberated from the suffering. So now, conventionally, how do we explain nibbana? Now, in this approach, it's just the chitta and chetasika process is there. Nirvana state was there. So there was no being who attained nirvana. It's only the non-arisen aggregates, non-self, non-arisen aggregates got seized. So there was no one who attained nirvana in terms of the ultimate explanation. Because there is no one to attain nirvana, even at this place. It's just the nama and rupa existing. So there is nothing to worry that what would happen to me or what would happen to us if we attain nirvana, because there was no person in the first place to get seized from the nirvana. What got seized from the nirvana are the nama and rupa, not the being, not the person. It was the nama and rupa which got seized. Now we go into the conventional approach. According to the conventional approach, we say the Buddha attained nirvana. Arahants attained nirvana. We want to attain nirvana, otherwise we are going to face the suffering. So when we bring the conventional approach, nama and rupa are called we, or the being. I will use the word being, the living being. So to which part of nama and rupa does this word applies? Is it the past nama rupa, present or future? To all. That's why we say, I have been experiencing such suffering in samsara. I am experiencing at the moment and I will experience in the future. So if we are in the conventional explanation, we should not mix it with the ultimate explanation. We cannot say, I exist only at this moment, not in the future, not in the past. Future and past are ultimate realities. Only this moment we get the conventions. No. If the convention teaching, if we approach the conventional approach, the panyati approach, if we take it as a living being, the entire process of nama and rupa should be taken as the being, living being. So conventionally, the entire thing is the being. The entire thing, entire process is the being. All paramatta dhammas, anuppanna dhammas, that's why we have a discussion. So when we call a being, we have to include all, even the potencies. Even the potencies. So this is the being, the sphere of the being. Right? We can draw it with another color if you want. This is the being, conventionally. We take this is the living being. Living being. That is a conventional explanation. Take in the aggregates at the living being. So it's not an ultimate explanation. It's a conventional explanation. So if we take the entire thing as the being, what happens? when the causes are removed, this will also be removed. So if this unarisen suffering belongs to the being conventionally, so where the being was before, now there is nirvana. So we say the being attains the nirvana. If the unconditioned non-arisen suffering belongs to the being, this nirvana also should belong to the being conventionally, not ultimately. So if we make the conventional approach, that was our suffering and that's our liberation. I was bound with suffering and I attained liberation because conventionally I have attained. This is nirvana because I was labeled to the entire process of the suffering. So if we get rid of this part of the suffering, which was the non-arisen part, then what gets manifest, what remains is the nirvana, the non-existence of suffering. So that belongs to me also. So if you make the ultimate approach, if you make the ultimate approach, there is no person, it's just a nama and rupa process. The non-arisen nama-rupa continues, bound to continue as long as the causes remain. When the causes are removed, that suffering gets ceased. So there's no one who attained nirvana. Only the non-arisen aggregates got ceased with the removal of the causes. So this is the unconditioned state and it does exist even at this moment, because think that if this was not attained, if this was not attained, we are bound with this suffering. We are bound with this suffering. Now, just to conclude the lecture, the final statement. At this level, now if we, as long as the Arahanta Magga is not attained, this we are bound with this suffering. But if we have the opportunity now to decide or to strive whether we arouse this or not, if we arouse this, this would be seized. And the nirvana will be attained. If we don't arouse this, the suffering would still continue. So the nirvana didn't arise with our attainment. It already existed. It is a matter of entering or attaining it. It's just a matter of fact whether we bring the noble path or arouse the noble path or not. So therefore, even at this level, we have the two options. If we continue as it is, we would end up in the suffering. If you arouse the path consciousness and remove the causes, we would end up in nirvana. So even at this moment, we have the both possibilities. And it is a possibility that we could happen attain. And it is not just the absence of suffering. It's not this empty space. It has a glory. It is such a wonderful object. But by seeing it, by observing it, the path consciousness could eradicate the nirvana. When someone observes nirvana for the first time after Gotra Bhuchitta, surely he's going to eradicate defilement. So that is the glory of nirvana, which also indicates it's not just a mere empty space. It is the emptiness. We can call it an emptiness, absence of the suffering that is going to happen. So therefore, and the first approach is, it does exist as a completely separate state. What is the logic behind it is very difficult to explain. So therefore, in order to explain the unconditioned state, the last nirvana, the Mahanirvana, we have to have two approaches. So then this state is unconditioned, it has been existing forever, and it is also the liberation, cessation, eradication of the non-arisen suffering. Yeah, this would be the lecture for today. And yeah, I took some time as I was supposed to. So I'll open the forum for the Q&A session.
So I'm sorry, but I'm going to call out to Mr. Ananda, because I remember last time you had a lot of questions. Would you like to ask questions now? We can give you priority. Hello, Mr. Ananda.
Thank you so much, Ryan and Bhante. Actually, the last time question, I don't remember. I think it is, it's not really important, but anyway, so, you were mentioning about Asanya Sattva. So, it just came to my mind, if you want to get an kind of understanding about it, is it a situation when a person is brain dead, or, you know, in a coma. So during that time, I mean, he's living, but he has no any senses working. So is it something like, still, the, you know, still the person is existing, the person is living, but no senses. So I don't know whether it's kind of a situation like that. Is that?
There's no consciousness, but it is quite different, because when a person is conscious, unconscious, still at least the bhavanga chitta would continue. So asanya satta, there's no such chitta. So what is the bliss, what is the benefit of this, I will be discussing exactly in the next lecture. So we can have a good discussion after we have the explanation about the other stages of nirvana. So I'll be directly pointing about the asanya satta, your question even. Next week we can have a broader discussion of this after we discuss the topics.
There's another question. I don't know whether I can.
Please.
When you say asankata, now you say asankata is existing.
Yeah.
So it has to exist compared to a living being, right, Bhante? Like, now, if you understand it as non existence of samsara or samskara or, you know, namarupa, so that is what is called existing, right? Non existence of namarupa. That's
why that is the second approach. So if we come into with the second approach, your question is inevitable, because if it is the non-origin of suffering, it depends on the being, it depends on the suffering. So that's why I say if you only take the second approach, we come into a unexplainable thing, that how can it be unconditioned. So that's why the first approach is necessary. It does exist independent of the suffering, and that state is equal to the non-existence of suffering. So what I have done is, what we do is, we merge the two approaches. So nirvana is a completely different state of conditioned reality. But when the suffering becomes ceased, what remains, what has, is nirvana. So we say the suffering got ceased in nirvana. So the non-existence of suffering itself is nirvana. So that is by merging these two approaches. Otherwise, if we take only it is the cessation of suffering, as you said, we come into a problem that how can it be unconditioned. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Saru, saru, saru. And then again, hi, Bhante. So I'm still having some problem accepting the second approach.
Yeah.
Because we have the very similar situation for the akechenyayatana chitta, right? Because akechenyayatana chitta, it takes the absence of the first chitta, the rupa chitta, and we know that the absence of that, we define it as the panyati. So here, it looks to me they are very similar definition here, because it's also the absent or the cessation of the non-arising suffering. So that by itself is some kind of a panyati to me.
Yeah. So it can be explained as a panyati. There are places where it has been explained, like especially in the Abhidhamma Avatara. This cessation of the non-arisen. Cessation of the non-arisen. If we take the mere absence, it's considered as a panyati. It has to be a panyati for sure. So here what happens is, why do we call it the nirvana? Because of the first approach. Because it exists. So when this become non-existing, so what we have is the nirvana. So we identify that this non-existent is the nirvana itself. But if you avoid this idea, like if you remove this idea of nirvana and just focus on the non-existence of the suffering itself, then it is a panyati. It's a panyati, you are correct. So what we are doing here is, we are saying that there is no three stages. So in the ultimate approach, when the cessation is happening, what we have is nirvana. So then we are equalizing this non-existent with nirvana, and we explain that the non-existent is the nirvana itself. That is called appavatti. So now what is the difference of akinchanyayatana? So now that non-existence comes after it has passed away. Now from here, we know it's non-existing. Non-existing. Even though it's non-existing, the sankharas do exist again and again. So it's not a manifest. The Nibbana was not manifested here. The only difference is when this were come into the non-existence, Nibbana was became prominent or became evident. It came up. It is what is left. So therefore, in that regard, we are going to equalize these two. Because the reason is, according to the Buddha, Nirvana is the greatest bliss. Nirvana is the greatest bliss. Otherwise, what happens? If Nirvana is something else, this absence is just a mere panyati. Mere panyati. And if it is not Nirvana, the real bliss becomes the non-existence of the suffering. So that is not how the Buddha has mentioned. Buddha has called it as the ultimate bliss. So what we are doing, your question is very sharp and it's to the point. If you only consider about the non-existence of the suffering, regardless of the Nirvana state, yes, it's a panyati. So if someone called that is Nirvana, it has been rejected within the sasana. You can see this argument in Abhidhamma Avatara. And also some other commentaries. Some commentaries. It's clearly mentioned. Nirvana is not the anuppanna nirodha of suffering. That is focusing merely about the absence. It's merely about the absence. So what we are doing here is, when that suffering is absent, Nirvana is what is left. So we are going to equalize that absence with the Nirvana. So we attribute all these names to Nirvana, because that is the state which is left when the suffering is no more.
Please
go
ahead, Sayale Pumya.
Good morning, Sayale.
So, according to my handout, you mentioned five kinds of Nibbana. So, this type of five kinds of classification, I couldn't find in the Dibidaga. I only found it like Bahana.
Yes.
And also, another Bahana is the Basadi Bahana. Is you didn't mention like that. So this is based on which reference? Classification.
Yeah. I will come into that in the next lecture. Now we just explain about the existence of the great Nirvana. The remaining four I'll come. Patipassadi Pahana is Palachitta. So it falls into the conditioned state. So it is. So actually, we all within the sasana, we have seven types of Nirvana. One is Michchadikti Nirvana. We will next lecture I will give a more broader explanation on this. Those Nirvana have been advocated in the Brahmajala Sutta. Ditta Dhamma Nibbana Vada, five types of Nirvanas. One is enjoying the sensual pleasures, one are the remaining are the four jhanas, including the arupa. If someone consider them as the cessation or Nirvana, it's a wrong view. Then the other six, the five I have listed, and then according to the sevenfold Nirvana, it comes at the number six. So the remaining what I have removed is the Patipassadi Nirvana. Patipassadi Nirvana is the Palachitta. If you know the Mangala Sutta, we have Tapocha Brahmacharyancha Ariyasachana Dasanang Nibbana Satchikiriyacha Etam Mangalam Uttamam. Here Nirvana, according to the commentary, Nibbana Satchikiriya means attaining the Palachitta, not attaining the great Nirvana. So some places, Palachitta has also been referred as Nibbana. It's a conditioned Nirvana. Means we should not get stuck with the word Nirvana. For the Palachitta, the word Nirvana has been used because the kilesas become more tranquilized. Then Sammuti Nibbana, we can find in many places, not with that specific term. What is the logic behind it, we'll discuss next week. The Tadanga Nirvana, you can find the word in Anguttara Nikaya. I have given you the reference, Tadanga Nibbana. And also it can be explained based on the Salleka Sutta. And the Vikkamana Nibbana can also be found in the Navaka Nipata of Anguttara Nikaya, the word. In the commentarial explanations, we find it equalized with Pahana. And also if you go Tadanga Nibbana, Tadanga Nibbuto, we find these terms within the literature. So how do we explain them based on the Tipitaka, and also practically, what is the use of such states? We'll have a more broader discussion next week, because now I have explained about the great Nirvana which we aspire. So the same formula we are going to apply to the remaining four, four Nirvanas. The fourth one is also equal, is the eradication of Kelesas. I'll be explaining on all these four in the next lecture, because now I have made the approach to the unconditioned state. The same approach will be made to explain the remaining four states. You cannot find the list in one place in the Tipitaka.
Okay, thank you so much, Pandya. And also today, you made one point is very clear. Is something, if we consider the living being, so we have to consider the living being in the past and the future, if we talk in that sense.
Yes.
But as I heard many teachers, when they extend those points, sometimes they mix with Paramatta Dhammas. So it made the listeners confused.
Yeah, actually. So in some places, people ask the questions, right? So we mix Paramatta and Panyati and explain. Then it can make a huge confusion. So if we make the Panyati approach, past, present and future, all realities should be considered as the being. Then the cessation of that suffering is the Nirvana, and it also belongs to the being, if we make a conventional approach. Then if we make an ultimate approach, there's no being to be discussed. So then what happens in that regard? There's no one who has attained the liberation. It's just the cessation of the suffering of the non-arisen reality.
Yes, thank you so much, Pandya. This point is very important.
Good morning, Bante.
Good morning, Saleh.
Bante, as I listened to the lecture, a simile came to my mind. And I just want to ask if it's a valid simile or not.
Yes.
How would Bante think? So if we compare the whole existence to an ocean, mm-hmm. and we would say that when the ocean is like, when the wind blows and the ocean becomes wavy, so there are waves on the ocean. Okay, no wind, the ocean is completely still. So here in that simile, how it occurs to me, the wind Kama and Avijja, and the completely still ocean Nibbana, and the waves on the ocean are Namarupa. Wouldn't that be a valid simile?
It would be a valid simile if we can, my personal view is, if we can clearly distinguish that the still water and the waves are completely two states. Would it lead to an idea that the samsara came from Nirvana? Because if the Nirvana is the still state, the same water, and same water had become waves, so does it lead to the idea that the samsara is based on Nirvana? If we can avoid this confusion, yes, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand when, you know, many teachers speak about inseparability of the two.
Yeah.
Not that one conditions the other. Well, let's say there is a wind, Kama and Avijja.
Right.
Right? And that is blowing all the time.
So we'll
we don't know how long, we cannot say how long it's blowing.
So it means,
but
like,
we can, you know, stop the wind.
So for example, this is the ocean. So the wind is blowing. Right? Because of the wind, we have the waves, right? So if the wind was cut off from here, then the ocean becomes still, right? This is the simile, okay? Right? So this is the sun, nama and rupa, right? This is Nirvana, okay? So this is nama and rupa, right? So now, The only concern that I have, otherwise I would fully agree with this. Really, is it saying that Nirvana existed at this moment even, and Nama Rupa sprung from Nirvana? Did you get my point? Like the concern that I have, because it's the same water. So if, like, the only thing is, if someone can argue, this Nirvana, Nibbana is the water, same water that has come into the waves. So if we talk about the wave function, like it's not, we are not talking about the water, we are talking about the waves yeah, then that makes sense to me, because waves is other than something other than the water. But can this lead, only concern that I have is, can it lead to the idea that samsara came forth from nirvana?
Yeah, I see.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for insights. Yeah.
Mante actually has no questions. Also, I mean, so earlier when you were talking about the beginning of samsara, actually, Mante, I mean, it is very, very clear, isn't it, that, you know, you can't have a beginning, because, so when you believe in Hetupala, so for everything there should be a reason. So then, you know, it could be a big bang or whatever in the, you know, present day, you know, things. So for that also we have to have a reason, you know, something has to come together. So is it really necessary to talk about, you know, beginning of samsara? I mean, isn't it very, very apparent that there is no beginning or end?
Yeah, when we have that approach as a Buddhist, yes, it's very apparent that it cannot have a beginning. You are correct. I would agree with you 100%. But the thing is, why people are searching for a beginning? Because it's because why do we say it's conditioned? Because we have the very basic of the conditionality, conditioned theory, the theory of conditionality. Very basic is based on nama and rupa. We are talking about nama and rupa. It arises and passes away. They have a momentary existence. So before they suddenly pop up and vanishes, so there should be causes for that. So likewise, we see a stream of nama and rupa. But if someone doesn't have this understanding or doesn't have this view about nama and rupa, I think they will have problems in accepting this theory. Because for us, every chitta has a beginning and passing away. So therefore, we find similar, we need similar causes for this existence. But if someone doesn't have this nama rupa paricheda idea, nama and rupa, I think there can be some difficulties in some means to understand that there should not be a beginning. I think that is based on this, because we are talking about nama and rupa, based on nama and rupa. If someone doesn't have that idea, maybe, I cannot give an answer for how others think. Because I am it's very clear that many people are searching for a beginning, right?
Even otherwise, like for example, if you just take only material things like
right.
you know, Big Bang for example. So Big Bang to happen also there should be other
that's true. So some scientists are suggesting there were another Big Bangs before that. Informations and contraction, and this is just one part of this. Yeah, it's yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So we'll call it a day then.
Thank you, Martin. Yes.
Yeah, thank you for listening, and may this merit help us to attain the ultimate liberation and also support the prolongation of the Buddha's teachings. Buddha sasanam chirantittatu. Buddha sasanam chirantittatu. Buddha sasanam chirantittatu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.